You know, nobody can say nothing about the black woman because we are strong. We are stronger than any race, any creed, any animal, anything. I tell you, we know how to get things going, get things started, figure out stuff in a nick of time. I am reporting from Little Company of Mary Hospital, in Torrance, California. I found out today that my godmother is in the hospital and that she was not doing well. So after work, I came straight here and needed to see her and then, you know, come out to the car and do this wonderful Mindful Mondays podcast. And so where there's a will, there's a way. Thank God for cell phones and such that you can hook up your internet to your laptop and do whatever it is you need to do. We black women are strong women and we figure stuff out regardless. Okay. So welcome. It is a beautiful day. When I say it is not a cloud in the sky is blue and it is a beautiful day here in Torrance, California at Little Company of Mary Hospital parking lot. So, other than that, it's a lot going on. I'm sure that on our Wednesday show in the mix, conversations with Colette and Corliss, we will have a conversation about the Roe versus Wade situation, but not today, not right now, but I just want to stay on the topic and give my guests an opportunity to continue with what everybody is looking to do. But this has been a crazy day, but it's okay. It all worked out. My godmother is doing so-so. She's been in a lot of issues, and so now just trying to make it all happen, so... I have with me for part three, Dr. Clarissa Francis. How are you, Dr. Francis? Dr. Francis, if I didn't say it before, is a professor at Humboldt State, right?
And I'm a lecturer at...
lecturer. Yeah, they have all these terminology. Right. Lecturer at Humboldt State. Which classes do you teach at Humboldt?
I teach in it's the Department of Critical Race. Gender, sexuality, studies. So I've taught this past semester Intro to Black Studies and Civil Rights to, from Civil Rights to Black Power. So I'll be teaching an intro class again.
And this is your second time teaching this class or third?
This actually was my first semester.
Oh, this is your first semester?
Spring was my first semester.
That's interesting. Okay, because I know Dr. Ramona Bell, as people know, that she's been on our show a couple times, and she had been talking about you, but I thought you had, because I'm, of course, since I'm not on campus, I'm definitely not on campus now since I don't work for Humboldt anymore, but I always thought that you were, she'd just been talking about you, so I thought you had been on for at least a year, or at least, you know, had taught, you know, three semesters, so I didn't realize that this was your first semester.
Yeah, but she actually, Dr. Bell, she sat on my dissertation committee.
Okay, that's why she knows you. Okay.
We've known each other for years.
Here I was thinking it was because of the humble connection, but again, it was more so because of the dissertation, because she kept saying, I have somebody that would be great for your show. And I just assumed, which is not a good thing to do because we know what assuming does. I just assumed that was the connection, that not knowing that she was instrumental in helping you get your doctorate. So that's a beautiful thing. Black women, strong black women sticking together to bring more strong black women into the fold. So I will read the promo, this is a part three. Dr. Francis will discuss Black women's movement towards sexual liberation. I've gotten so many text messages and people will really enjoy the first two parts to your presentation and are just, you know, wanting to hear more. And so anyway, let me finish reading and then I'll make my comments because I'm doing too much. This This includes removing shame, which was really a big deal, healing, building healthy relationships. She will focus on bodily autonomy, freedom of sexual expression, and access to pleasure for Black women. She will also reinforce the law around abortion as being related to denial and sexual liberation. So put the topic as healing over time. Lessons learned from the real hot, and what is this, a hot doc? What do you call yourself? The hot?
Yeah, the real hot girl doc.
Hot girl doc, right. So what I was hearing from a couple of my friends from the last two episodes or the last two sessions that you were on Intentional Talk Radio was, and I know for me, it was like the last one, really, when I got off, I sat and I thought about, because I think we were touching upon the fact that women are silenced. And especially when it comes to sexual health, we are truly silenced. We're just supposed to, and I think we alluded a little bit to it, you know, we're just supposed to take it and be done with it. And when you see, you know, the slaves and women being raped, and especially with slaves, you know, it's so funny how, I'm just going to say it like this. It's so funny how the white man doesn't want us, but the white man wants us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't want to give us equal rights. They don't want to give us raises. They don't want to give us jobs, but they want us. And there's something about the Black skin and the Black woman that's erotic enough for them. They'll have sex with us all day, all night, all the time, but won't give us a job, won't give us a promotion, won't give us opportunities. Talk a little bit about that sexual tension that comes with that whole just shut up, lay there, and deal with it because I'm going to take it from you anyway kind of mentality, if that makes any sense.
Now, yeah, so definitely, as you know, much of my work is based in history, you know, so much of my, like, my foundation is in Africana studies and women's studies. And so I mentioned before even the origins of gynecology, you know, and the use of enslaved Black women's bodies, you know, for the procedures that we are familiar with today. And so to speak to women being silent, Black women being silenced, but then also just being used. And yes, the reason that we see that when, if we're speaking about white men, we have, you know, access to a lot of information and resources. You know, what occurred on during slavery and the relationship with those who enslave Black people. And then also something we don't often talk about is the relationship with white women as well. And some of the, you know, and so when you say that about they want us, but they don't want, they, you know, but that respect, that protection, or that love, or that, you know, those different things that, you know, we may be looking for. But also you can see this with, I would say in general, with, as it relates to Black women, people either want us or want to be in us, or they want to be us, you right, know? Right. And so in this, we can see this with cultural appropriation, where now it's like Black women are trying to catch up with trying to be Black, you know, appear to be a Black woman. And so, and then also with black men, those who have partners that are Black men. And then also, as I think I touched on before, of even with other Black women, and I'm not speaking to, just like in romantic relationships or sexually, but even the response, you know, that we get, especially, you know, with my work being the hot girl movement, especially the response to something that we have not seen before in this way. And so in what I consider freedom, and when I speak about sexual liberation, when I talk about sexual liberation, I'm speaking about bodily autonomy, is control of the body, agency, you know, expression, So actually making decisions around what happens to my body, consenting to sexual acts, you know, consenting, you know, if when I want to make a decision as it relates to my body, and then pleasure. And so when something that we've noticed when Black women, when they either create or benefit from their bodies, from their own bodies, consent in different ways, even whether it's from dancing or it could be from sex work, it could be in entertainment, it can be, you know, in so many ways. And when it's no longer only benefiting others, but finding ways where we can, you know, the commodification of Black women's bodies, you know, it's like, oh, wait, hold on. It's like, who, you know, I feel like it's a, it's like, well, who do you think you are? Like, oh, no, this is, no. It's like, we don't do this, you know? And so, and then as it relates to pleasure, you know, this is something that we talked about. We talked about on the other two shows of how something that I aim to do is normalizing us talking about pleasure, you know, where it's not an afterthought. If we're talking about the body, if we're talking about reproductive health, if we're talking about relationships, if we're talking about love, if we're talking about wellness, why are we not talking about pleasure? And then also, even in some of these conversations with healing, I don't feel like we talk enough about healing. And when I speak about healing, as it relates to my work, and when I touch on, when you mentioned like with the relationships and the bonds, you know, that we develop, some of these messages and experiences, you know, that we've experienced individually, collectively, you know, throughout history, it can be traumatizing, you know, and so, and not even just actual physical experiences and trauma, but I mentioned messaging because something that came up, and this was something I experienced personally, but something that came up even in my research, the women who I interviewed when asked, you know, when they were developing, you know, who they were and as they was growing, you know, and, you know, towards their sexual liberation, they mentioned the messages they received about, you know, as growing up as a girl, as a Black girl, Black women, and the different messages they were receiving, but also the shame, you know, that came with being a girl, being the woman. It's a certain responsibility that is expected of women or girls that isn't always, I feel, is the same way as we raise, you know, with younger boys, and specifically something that we, although there are other things, so there's, you know, while there are some things that, and, you know, well, okay, well, I'll touch on that. Let me not go there yet.
Go back for a second. when you said the shame or the, I lost the thought.
In the messaging,
yeah, the messaging. Like you were saying, what you said you experienced something through your research yourself.
Oh, okay, yes. So personally, something I always mention. I grew up in a church, preacher's kid, heavily in the church, and all the way up through high school. And so something that I remember, and I'm always been I'm a scholar, I'm a researcher, I'm an educator. So whatever it is, I'm always was very inquisitive and curious. So I was really interested, like Bible study, I had my pen and paper, and, you know, I was like asking questions and everything, because there was certain things that just, and this, not to just speak to this one religion, but just as an example of cultural, you know, cultural messages, and then which is related to religion. Certain things that when it came to women, you know, the restrictions, the shame that came with being a woman, even the story when we talk about Adam and Eve, you know, and then it's the the responsibility was taken, you know, from the man. And like, you know, it's just like this idea that women are the ones that are well, I guess I'll speak to, I guess, Jezebel, you know, this term that we use, which was one of the stereotypes of Black women used as Jezebel, which is also a excuse used, used during slavery as a justification of raping Black women, you know, enslaved Black women because they are Jezebel or they, you know, this is what they want anyways. And so,
okay.
So this is something, you know, that goes, you know, historically and in something that's condoned or even, you know, passed on culturally and, you know, and sometimes in religion. And so something that I noticed when we're talking about when to be in talk to about sex, you know, all my earlier messages around sex, things that I was told were no sex before marriage, don't get pregnant. And something that I thought was so weird before I went to college, even in church, this message I had was don't leave your cup around. And I was just like, that's interesting. And so
you drink your cup?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And so no sex before marriage is already, that's something that came up even so in the research and when I'm interviewing, these are similar messages that was brought up of no premarital sex. Don't get pregnant. And so so for me, as I, you know, explored more, this is like what like this is it. I was like, these are the, this is what, you know, all you giving me. And then that one class or that one class or two in health education, you know, or you know, or in health class or whatever, the limited information. So I was like, this is it. And everything else we learning from our peers. Yeah, the streets, our peers, or we, it's trial and error. We figuring stuff out on our own and things that we can see, you know, not verbally. And so something that I stay true to is who did I meet when I was younger. And so I think about as I was growing, you know, as I was learning about my body, like I remember when started my cycle. Oh, another message was that I received when started my cycle at 10 was you can't be messing with these those little boys now. And I was just like,
oh right, because you can get pregnant.
Yeah. And I was just like, wait, I was like, so we can't play tag anymore? I was like, what do you, like, I'm just thinking like, so wait, now that I'm on my cycle, I was like, what is going, you know? And it's just, these are missed opportunities, I feel like, where there could have been some conversations, or if, you know, I feel like if I had, you know, someone who, and then later I realized that, I think, everyone, did the best that they can do with what they were giving or the lack thereof. And so, which made it more, I guess, important for me to get the information. As I got the information, even as I was still exploring, I was passing it on. And that's really how I got into this work, even before professionally or academically. It was personal, you know, because I didn't have this information. This don't make sense. It was like, this cannot be wrong. And especially as I started having my own experiences, I was like, this cannot be as bad as they are trying to make it seem. You know, it's like, because especially exploring self-pleasure, you know, and masturbation. And like, I was like, this, it was like, how could this be wrong if it's just me? You know, and then mm-hmm. It was other things that I questioned. And so this was something that, some of the women and I had in common, some of these earlier messages that we didn't realize sometimes until we were adults or as we were on our journeys of healing, where we was like, wow, this kind of stuck with me. It's like, I didn't even realize this was something I was still holding on to, you know, being these messages. And also as it relates to the body, I remember, I think I may have mentioned this before, but I've always had some type of shape, you know, whether it's like hips, breasts and everything. And so, and I remember being told, you know, to not wear certain things because it could show, you know,
right, and attract maybe a man or whatever.
Yeah, and so it's like, then again, I feel like this could have been an opportunity to have a conversation. It's like I'm already feeling maybe self-conscious or feeling weird. My body is changing, you know, starting this, you know, my cycle, like I have to deal with this every month, you know, like, and then also, in addition to that, right. Now, like I need to cover up or not, make sure I'm not being too appealing. You know,
it's almost like they were teaching us to be ashamed of our bodies because, you know, some people, breasts grow quicker than others. You know, you're already feeling, I mean, I knew my nieces at 12, you know, was a size 36D. And I was like, at 12 years old, but then, you know, that they talk about that as far as the preservatives and the McDonald's and the foods we're eating and stuff. But I mean, she was full on woman and she's only 12. And so then, you know, it's like, well, watch what you're wearing because then you don't want to attract someone. And then, you know, then you have this element of rape that might come to play. The other thing that I wanted to comment on that you mentioned about the messaging, as far as that one health class or that health class that you take in high school where they attempt to explain to you, you know, birth control or sexual health and things of that nature. And it's like, it's really quick. They don't want to talk about it too much. And it's just like, okay, these were opportunities. If these were opportunities where you could have really trained, not just Black women, but women in general, on how to take care of themselves and their bodies, making sure they're clean and making sure, you know, this, that, and the other, you know, you have your cycle and understanding that whole process. Mm-hmm. And so my parents are from Jackson, Mississippi. And, my mom was always about when my dad moved out here and then sent for her, they got married and have been out here for years, over 50 years. And one of the things that I remember about my mom is that she was going to be the one that was going to teach us. And then whatever we heard, we would then relate back and say, well, what did my mama say? My mama said this. And then I would always say, my mama said da 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 da. And they're like, your mama told you that? How do you know? And I was like, my mama. And so growing up, we had Kaiser. And so they used to have the preteen, you had the preteen doctor, and then you had your teen doctor, and then, of course, your womanly doctor. But in the preteen stage, there were these books, you know, what a 5-year-old should know, what a 6-year-old should know, what a 7-year-old. And my mom would review those with us so that we wouldn't hear from the streets first. We were educated. We did the educated piece first, and then we could compare to what the streets was saying this was. And I always found myself saying, my mama said, well, I read the such and such, and that's not how it is. And no, you can't do that. And blah, blah, blah. So that by the time I did get that health class in high school, I was just like, okay, I understood it. I knew it. You know, and it's unfortunate that we are so ashamed to talk about our sexual health. Like you said, our sexual desires, our sexual needs and wants. And when we do, it's overly killed with the raunchiness of the Little Kims and the whoevers that are in that category, you know, that category of people. And then you have, it's either all in with, oh, this and I want this and you better do this to me, whatever, or not. It's never the happy medium where that women are taking the time to educate their daughters about this whole sexual situation. And so when you were mentioning that, you know, so you're a PK, you know, like you said, you grew up, you got your breasts, you started your period. Now don't do this and don't wear that. And you need to make sure you're covered up to here and wear shirts that are like this. And then not understanding why, and then thinking, and then probably being teased because you were probably overclothed because they didn't want anything to happen. So it's like all these different messages are happening back and forth. And you're just like not knowing what to do or how to feel. Plus then you've got extra this and extra butt and extra this. And so you're, and the guys are whistling at this and the guys are saying this. And it's so much going on. No wonder we don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. And so, something like, where I come in is I don't mind having the conversations, and it's like, I, you know, I enjoy, creating spaces, you know, safe spaces, you know, for, and just because I let people know, just because I am an expert in this area and have been doing this work for some time now, but it's still very, it's personal. And then also, I don't know everything, you know, and then also I don't know everyone's experience. And so creating a safe space for storytelling, like that was something, one of the components of, in my conclusion, like with my research is storytelling, you know, imagine instead of, or along with some of the messages that we receive, you know, of, don't leave your cup, you know, of maybe having this conversation about consent or having this conversation of what happens when you do leave your cup or whatever. And who is, you know, instead of, you know, coming, you know, from that perspective, but then also like when we talk about premarital sex or no sex without marriage, and I always, the type of child and the person that I am, anytime anybody say anything, I'm like, well, why? You know, it's like, but why? It's like, you know, and so, and usually the response, not to those questions, but usually whenever I had a question, my parents would be like, look it up. And so I just kept looking things up. And it's like, now I'm more, you know, I have all this information. I was like, I might be able to teach you a class, you know, instead of asking. But just imagine if we've had like those women, which traditionally is something that we would do, is the women would, you know, teaching younger women, like, this is how, you know, some of the things that you should be, that you are going to have to be, you know, mindful of, or you're going to have to, this is how, like, maybe it was some herbs related, some practices, like you mentioned the hygiene, you know, and then also even with those, this, the more challenging conversations is if there was something that I experienced or something that I'm aware of, or because of other people's experiences that's related to trauma, some type of harm. Sometimes, a lot of the times, I believe we give that response, that trauma response, which is, now you can't be doing anything with those boys or cover up or these different things that, as you mentioned, it's shaming. However, and without knowing that story. So it's like, you know, just imagine if we heard more stories from our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunts. And even actually the men also, I think it's important for us to hear the stories, you know, from everyone, you know, and, but, you know, culturally, you know, about airing dirty laundry and then not wanting to talk about it, because this is still a newer practice for us to be talking about mental health, you know, and therapy. I love now that I'm starting to see more people refer to their therapist, you know, refer to like, yeah, when I was in therapy or my therapist told me, mm-hmm. and I was like, I love it. I'm like, yes. And so I'm happy about that. But earlier generations, that was not, you know, that was not the case. And still, you know, it's still something that we're working on. And so it's like, in order, if the intention is to protect, you know, younger generations and, you know, protect, supporting them, showing that you love them and care, then why not share some of your lessons learned, you know? And then if you aren't able to have these conversations, you know, because maybe it's something that you haven't dealt with yet, which is, I believe, is common, you know, and so you give, I think my mother said, she would always say, if people knew better, they would do better.
Right.
And so I feel, you know, that was something that really stuck with me and I was able to show people grace, you know, even those in my family. It's like, this may be something that stuck with me. And this was something that I had to, cause especially around the body, that was something I still, and I can't even say that I don't even to today, you know, like I still think about it even when I'm wearing certain things, although I'm a lot more liberated and free today, you know, with what I wear and what I do. But I just remember definitely when it was that, I'll say in undergrad, I could even go earlier, like high school, where I'm starting to really feel myself, because I started, like, I already, you know, I have my shape, my younger girl shape, but now I'm like, I'm becoming a younger woman. And like, I felt more comfortable, and I think maybe allowed to start wearing clothes that was more revealing, showing my shape. And it was about, I was able to appreciate it. You know, of course it was nice. I would get some comments, you know, and people would admire, which it wasn't all like bad. And, but something I also wish that we would do is, if we're going to talk to young girls, which I think we should be talking to young boys as well, for multiple reasons, because especially if we're talking about assault, it can happen. You know, it's not just young girls, you know, it's young boys too. Some stories, even some rappers are coming out now talking about realizing some relationships that they had with young, older girls and women was inappropriate. But something that I wish we can do is also having these conversations with those who may, I think it's levels to it, because those who receive some of the same conditioning. So while girls, you know, are receiving this shaming, you know, for how we dress, what we doing with our bodies, what are the messages that we're telling the boys, you know, or telling them, or young men? And so some of this is coming out in response to the hot girl summer, or, you know, being sexually liberated, talking about what I want, what I don't want, twerking, you know, all these different things. And it's an assumption that this type of woman does not deserve respect or protection, you know, and it's just like, why, you know, why is that? And like having more of those conversations. And actually, if, and when we talk about mental health and therapy and healing, having real conversations about feelings, you know, like we tell young kids, even as we get into relationships, you know, we tell young boys, don't cry, man up, you know, like, you know, boys don't cry. And then some of them grow up, don't cry, don't express their feelings, you know, and feel like they can't be a man, or it threatens their masculinity, you know, right. If they're expressing themselves. I had I just did a live, I think a week or two ago, a couple weeks. It was in honor of that, it was a Zaddy's edition, but for Father's Day, we had a really good conversation around masculinity. And it was so helpful. I think while women, Black women are on this journey, you know, this movement towards sexual liberation, a hope, you know, that I have is that Black men and boys are also on their journey, you know, because although there's some double standards when we talk mm-hmm. about being sexually liberated, but we, some of our trauma, we have shared trauma historically, you know, generational trauma, and it just shows up differently, you know, for us. However, when we get into these relationships, and I'm just speaking to right now, Black men and Black women, relationships, they come out in one way or another. And it sometimes shows up as we're attacking each other. We're defensive. We're protecting whether it's protecting the masculinity, femininity, or defending ourselves because we felt shame, or maybe having some experience that has caused us to harden in some way or be defensive. And so if something that I would love for those, even if those who may not understand, or who this movement may not yet resonate with them, is to understand what this means for us, for those of us who are on this journey, you know, what this can mean for a Black woman to make a decision for her body consensually, you know, and is happy about it. And actually it brings them joy. It brings them pleasure. And they're actually able to communicate with others of what they want and do not want. Because think about when that does not exist, when you're not able to communicate what you want, you know, what you don't want, what feels good, what doesn't feel good. And not even just as it relates to sexual acts, you know, and sex, but even how you want to be shown love or intimacy. And even, and I know I focus on music, and it's like music, it's been a part of our culture that's just, you know, in so many ways we've expressed ourselves, but it's entertainment. You know, it's entertainment. Some have used it in a way to tell their story, and it may represent a part of, you know, a part of their life or lifestyle, but it's just music. Because there was some really amazing artists, you know, back in, if we go to like 60s, 70s, you know, even 90s was probably one of my favorite decades, you know, music and fashion. But they might have been singing about love and intimacy, and in a way that was you might not even know they were talking about sex. But then if you actually look in their personal lives, you know, we see many of the artists, and not just today, earlier artists, where there was some cases of abuse, you know, in their relationships. You know, so it's like, this isn't something new either when I'm talking about the relationship between Black men and women, between women, Black women, even with sister friendships, and how now is the time we're calling out a lot of things, you know, and some people feel some type of way about it. I think for different reasons. One, it's uncomfortable because anytime you're doing something different, you know, or any time it's something new, it can be scary. And is you're not sure how this is supposed to be. And if you're taught a certain way for so long, you begin to think this is how it should be. Mm-hmm. You believe that there are no other options. And then also because of personal experience or experience of others, you have been taught that it could potentially be harmful. And so it makes sense, you know, of wanting to police ourselves and police others on the way that we conduct ourselves. But that's fear, you know, and just like as we do as it relates to racially, you know, when we talk about racial profiling and we talk about in different systems, we also need to keep that same energy when we're talking about sexual liberation as well. If we, you know, liberated, it's like we can't, you know, I think I mentioned this before, it's like if we want to be liberated, then let's actually be liberated in all aspects of life. As we're you know, advancing economically, let's, you know, in taking care of our bodies, our, you know, mental wellness, what about our relationships? What about our relationships we have with ourselves and each other? You know, and so that's something that I would challenge others, you know, to question, like, why does this bother me? Why would this person making this decision about their body, why does this bother me? What is it? What messages have I received, or what experiences have I had, you know, for me to feel this way? You know, or to think this about them. And then also trying to get an understanding, you know, of why this is something that would be considered liberating for someone else. Not that it matters or should matter to the person, you know, but, you know, just interest to have an understanding. Rather, you know, I think it's easier to judge and shame than to just actually have an understanding. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I was thinking about, because again, you know, growing up with my mom, she's very strict. Put it this way, they call our house Cell Block Bennett. and I laugh now, and I thank them every day for being as strict as they were, because I'm sure my life would be in a whole different direction based on the community and the neighborhood that I lived in, grew up in the rolling 60s, which is the Crips, the blue bandanas, blue rags, however way you want to put it. And the girls were banging just as hard as the boys were. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had a former gangbanger on my show last year, Lisa, and she talked about, you know, just that whole dynamic of the women being just as strong and fighting just as much and protecting the territory just as much as the men. We're going to jail just as much. We're killing just as much. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about when you were saying that, and then I related back to like my mom and how strict my dad worked two jobs, and so that my mom could kind of work part time up until I was in the eighth grade, and then once I went into high school, that's when she went full time, because she wanted to make sure that she either worked at the school, she volunteered at the school that we attended, however that went down because of her upbringing in Mississippi and not having the complete proper education and proper ways of explaining sex and sexual things and health and hygiene. She made sure, she was like, nope, she read about it. She made sure that she was not going to make the same mistakes or make those types of mistakes, that she knew that because she was going into it with knowledge, she was able to express that. So, you know, things like, cause I've always been a full figured woman. So it's like, you know, don't wear your arms out, cause mm-hmm. your arms are too big. And to this day, mm-hmm. I had on the outfit once years ago. My best friend was like, oh, that's cute. I was like, oh no, girl, I got to put a shawl over it. She mm-hmm. said, you still dealing with your mama's, messaging. And, but mm-hmm. that messaging sticks with you. And it's just like, you know, no, my arms are too big. And when I see women that have large arms and they have a tank top on and they're just being whatever, you know, breasts is huge, you know, breasts are huge, arms are huge. They're even bigger than me. And they're just as free, like, hey, I'm woman. I'm every woman. It's all in me. And I don't give a damn because here I am. Here I am, baby. You know?
Right.
And I'm looking at them and I'm like, oh, wow. Like, don't you feel uncomfortable? But again, depending on the messaging, if her mother told her something different, or she decided to just be out in that way, she decided that. And I still, to this day, even though I'll see something cute and I'll be like, dang, it's sleeveless. Mm. And I'm 55 years old, you know? And I'm just like, really? But it is something about the messaging that you get from your parents, your grandparents, your auntie, or whoever raised you, that it just sticks. I don't wear tight clothes. But when I put on something that fits, people are like, oh my God, like, oh, you lost weight, girl. Look at you. Oh, look at you kind of shape. And I'm like, you know, and this might be a pair of jeans that are a little bit tighter than normal. But not tight, like I can't breathe, but you know, it shows off the figure and I get so many compliments.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking like, okay, I mean, you know, okay, back up off me, it's okay. But it's just, you know, it has taken years for me to get to that point where I can put on something that shows off my figure, you mm-hmm. know? But that messaging and that years of messaging that happens. And I mean, we won't even talk about the whole sexual piece. Like you said, you know, I was on birth control for years before I was on birth control, maybe a year before my mom found out I was on birth control. And the only reason why she found out is with one of my friends, in my freshman year of college, March of my freshman year of college, she found out that one of my friends was pregnant and was having a baby. And my mama called me and was like, what are you doing up there? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I had no idea what she was talking about. So she was talking about how my friend blank, you know, was pregnant mm-hmm. and she was going to have a baby. And she did not, you know, we went through all this and put you in these schools mm-hmm. so that you could go to college. And what are you doing? And don't be doing. I was like, mama, I've been on birth control for a year. And it was literally, and the reason why I know it was March, because it was literally a year that I had been on birth control. I got birth control and had the opportunity to get it. at one of the clinics, you know, because again, these Planned Parenthood, these clinics that are helping women make choices about their bodies. Hello. You know, that's, you know, that we know that's a big topic right now, but I made the choice knowing that if I was going to have sex, I knew I couldn't get pregnant because I would surely die. Let's just be clear. My mama would kill me and she would go to jail killing me. Like she would be, she'd kill me and then take her butt to the whatever princess and say, I just killed my child because she was, you know, so I knew better. And so since I was having premarital sex, I was like, no, I learned this in class. I know there's birth control. My friend was like, oh, there's a clinic over here. You can go, you can talk to people. And I got on birth control March of my senior year. And so by the time that freshman year's March came around and my friend was pregnant and was going to have a baby, my mom lost her mind. And I said, Mama, I've been on birth control since March of 84. What? I was like, because I knew that you would kill me if I got pregnant. And I remember us reading those booklets from Kaiser and understanding how sex happens and how you can get pregnant and blah, blah, blah. And so I wanted to make sure that I didn't get pregnant. Now, what's she going to do? Yell at me at this point? She pissed, but she not pissed. Because she knows I listened to her. Now, mind you, I wouldn't got the pills without her. But still, she knew that I was responsible enough because she taught us at an early age to understand this whole sexual movement, for lack of better words, at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, as she's teaching us and showing us this is how a baby is made. How is a baby? Oh, it just comes out of, you know, like Santa Claus, you know, type thing. And no, that's just not how she taught me and my sister, because she didn't want it to be like some of her girlfriends from Mississippi that were that had 5 kids by the time they were 20. Yeah. Because they weren't using birth control, because nobody was talking about birth control. So, you know, all of this whole sexual movement and learning from your parents, like learning from your parents or whatever, is real talk. And the reason why I've never been pregnant to this day. A lot of 55-year-old women can't. They may have people that don't have kids, but I not only don't have kids, I've never been pregnant because I just know that my mama will kill me. That messaging. She will kill me if I'm pregnant.
No, I definitely, I could relate, actually to a lot of what you were, speaking on about the restriction and then having the conversation way later than, it should have came up. It was like, actually, but, I was going
to
say,
I wouldn't know what to do if I became pregnant right now. First of all, I can't, with the cancer, I can't get pregnant, but if I got pregnant, I would still be scared at 55. Cause it's like, my mama gonna kill me. Cause you just do not, you'll get pregnant. Period. And so I taught you how not to get pregnant. Do what you need to do. Now you didn't tell me you've been on these birth control for a year. You really better not ever get pregnant. And I just messaging.
Yeah. Oh, so that just, that made me think about something else too. As you're saying that, let me make a note to myself. Comprehensive sex education. So that's my note to myself. But to what you just said, to what you just said about, even as an adult, even later, you know, of thinking of, cause that's something, this was one of my things I was curious about, questions I had. I was like, okay, if you wait to, you know, to have sex or have, you know, experiences later, maybe even after marriage. You know, let's say, you know, you do wait till after marriage or you have your partner, how do you learn the things that you need to know about my cycle of when I'm ovulating? What does that even mean?
Right.
You know, there's certain things going on, you know, throughout the month or throughout the years as your body changes. And then about how to tell my partner, I don't like this. Like, this is something that I like, how to feel, you know, comfortable. So that's something I was like, even if, you know, I was like, sorry, I teach them different type of classes to the married folks in the church, you know?
Oh, really? You were teaching classes at the church?
No. This is a question I had. Like, so if you're telling me sex is supposed to be for, you know, married couple folks or adults, it's like, so are y'all offering these sex classes or intimacy classes?
Gotcha.
For them is what made me think about that. But something that, as a sex educator, something that, something that comes up, something that I wish parents and guardians, those, anyone who have younger people in their lives in some type of way, there's this misconception that if you talk about sex, then they're going to want to have sex.
Right.
Which many of us understand this, you know, it's sex or exploration is going to happen, you know, regardless of the conversations. But now we, younger people have a lot of access to a lot of information, you know, so it's not even just about the streets. They have it in their hands, you know, now it's so accessible to them, so much information. So it's almost as you have to even have some conversation that you think you wait, before, feel like you needed to wait till high school to have with them or when they become adults. It's like you need to start having some of these conversations earlier on because somebody is having conversations with them or they're being exposed in some type of way. And so I like when you said earlier when you said my mama said this, is it should be that there was somebody, some adult in your life or, you know, or somebody who you could look up to, who, you know, you can ask questions to. They'll give you information as objective as they can, you know, but just being a resource. And I'm happy, although it's challenging, but I'm happy that I'm that person I have all nephews. And so my brother and sister, children. And I'm happy that my nephews feel comfortable enough to ask me questions. And I'm also even, you know, happy that my siblings, they'd be like, oh, you need to talk to them about this. Like, you need to have a conversation with them about, you know, different things because it's a different ages, so different conversations. You know, but that's something that's so important because imagine that, you know, imagine having a person who you knew you could just ask them anything, you know, and you wouldn't feel judgment, even if they may have their thoughts or opinions, you know, you know that they're going to give you that information. You know, or if they don't have it, they're going to find out for you. And so that is something, you know, also, you know, that I offer as, you know, as a part of the work that I do is and encourage others is if we could limit, I guess, the way that we put our experiences, you know, on younger people and find ways. This came up in the talk I did a couple weeks ago too, is sometimes out of fear, you know, and because, you know, a protection, I want to protect younger people or, you know, either from not experiencing something that you went through or something that you know that's possible just because of the understanding of people, you know, out in the world, you know, and whether this could just be from shootings or it could be from some type of harm, physical harm, you know, finding some type of balance where you're informing them, you know, giving them the information, but also not
putting your issue on them.
Yes. So, you know, and even if that's something that you're still working on, find a way to express that to them. I think something that is challenging, you know, I think for the generations that are raising children now generations who are raising children who have children now is this this shift from being a lot more expressive and open with younger people because they are so, they are beyond, you know, the years. Like when we think about how we were maybe at 5 or 10 and you look at those who are between, you know, those ages now, they have, because they have so much access, you
right. know, but well, social media has just, is that.
Yeah. But then also they're just really intelligent too. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. They're the way that they're able to, you know, form things, you know, so it's just like, give them, Kiana?
Oh, go ahead, Kiana. You had a quick question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did. I just had a quick question. With regard to the way that we now have to teach ourselves about our bodies and we have to learn acceptance, can anyone point to, in your research, Clarissa, can you point to where that began? Because humans have always had bodies. We've always had sexuality. We've always had organs meant to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are our noses going to one day become taboo? You know, because if you think about it, like simplify it, it's just another part of the body and it serves functions. So like, to me, it looks like religion, early religion, was the start of that. But I didn't research it enough. So I'm wondering if you have any input.
So, because this could be a whole nother, a whole nother talk. So think, okay, well, one, I'll say control, social control. In order to control a group of people, it's not just about physically controlling them, but also psychologically controlling them. And so with their minds, you know, so how can, because I like that you said that about, well, not that I like, but you bring up a good point about when you said the nose, you know, like, would this be something that's taboo? Some cultures, yes, it already is. But this is how, when I'm speaking to my nephews, because now the youngest one is in that phase, he's discovered breasts. He is now aware of breasts. And so it's like a phase. I've seen this with the cousins. It's a certain age where they go from like, it's just nothing, you know, it's just like, oh, you know,
just
or whatever.
A girl to, ooh, yeah. She got breasts.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, boobs or whatever. And like, even, it's so funny. It's so cute and innocent. And I was just like, wow, this is something that I've seen just happen all the time. And I let him know. I'm like, and then I make it kind of like, what's the word? I'm not sure it's a different word I could use. But untaboo, like detaboo, Isaac. That's a word I made up. Okay. But is where I'm like, it's just a part of the body. I was like, just like your arms, your hands, we have feet. I was like, you have ears, and I was like, we have breasts. So I was like, it's chest for, you know, you. I was like, and breasts, you know, and I was like, it's just breasts. He was like, boobs. And like, I was like, yes. I was like, it's boobs, it's breasts.
And that's then, an outside influence though.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's just like, but this is, and it, instead of saying like, you know, which can be, you know, a automatic response is to like shame, you know, him or punish him for like, no, don't talk about that. And then that's it. Or don't say that. But this is something that eventually he's going to want to know more about it, because they're going to figure it out in one way or another. They're going to, it doesn't go away. You know, and so you could just use that as opportunities, you know, like we can be the change that we want to see. You know, if there's something that we notice in our upbringing, you know, or in conditioning or the messages we receive, how can you do something different? You know, and so what is it that you may need to check in yourself, you know, or, you know, heal within yourself or work on so you can be able to offer, you know, this lesson or, you know, deliver the messages in a different way, you know, where it's not, where it doesn't come off as shaming, judgment, or missed opportunity to, you know, learn something. I was talking to my one FNO long time, even about the cycle, you know, I was like, that's something that you should be aware of. I don't think only those with uterus, with the uterus,
understand
should know
what it's for, right? Yeah. Right, right.
And it's
right.
Like, especially if you're gonna have partners, you know, who have a uterus, you know, or this is in this, and even with what's going on, you know, when we talk about bodily autonomy and like, what does this all mean? Like, this is information. It's almost like we're talking about, like with math, it's like we're talking about calculus, and they don't even know the basic, you know, the multiplication table or addition or whatever. So it's like, how can they understand? How can we expect others to understand or be allies if they didn't even receive this information?
Basics.
You know, basics of what this means, you know? And so I think that's something that we can do better with, and not just those where this is your profession, but you can do this in your home. You can do this with in your church, you know, this way, you know, wherever there's opportunities to educate and just shift, you know, that the mindset around a lot of these topics.
I think now more than ever, because like you're saying, you know, we got 5-year-olds. They know how to use a phone. You just hand them a phone and they know how to use it. You know, 2-year-olds. I mean, it's like you said, they're so much more advanced than than we were, and definitely more advanced than you are, because you're more advanced than I was. And so it's like this patterns of happening. And so we've got to get ahead of it. And I so appreciate the things that you've been bringing up. And that's what made me bring up, you know, personal things, because we don't talk about this enough.
Yeah.
We don't talk about how do we teach our kids about sex? How do the kids learn about it? They're learning it from the streets. And that's why my mom was like, nope, you're going to hear from me first. Then you can hear what the street has to say. And then you compare and contrast your notes. So, man, that hour went by hella fast. And I appreciate it. And I want to talk to you more about, because it was a couple of topics that you could really kind of go into that could be separate shows that me and you will have a conversation off air about, to bring you back, you know, in a month or so of something, that, you know, because I think that this is important. And people have been saying, oh my God, Cordless, that's such a good show, because I never thought about that. I never thought about the things that my mom had put on me. And I know I'm still dealing with it. And still dealing with it. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
so these are just things, you know, you just don't get to discuss. And so that's why I use this forum as an opportunity for people to like listen and think about the things that they're doing and perhaps change the way, you know, change some things of raising their kids, or how they raise their kids, or how they talk about their mates, and how it's okay to tell your mate, I don't like when you do this to me. So we need to change it, or I'm out. You know, it may not be as, or then again, it might be. And so again, I appreciate you. I definitely want to pull on some of these topics and bring you back, you know, throughout the year on certain topics where people can start to think about, okay, how do I tell my mate? I just don't want this like this anymore. Or I want this like this. How come you don't do this? And then you wonder why folks be cheating, because what one man won't do, another one will. One woman won't do, another one will. So that's a whole nother show. But thank you so much. Clarissa, Dr. Francis, for coming back. And like I said, I want to have a conversation with you about how we can pull these different aspects out for folks, because people are listening and people are excited about, you know, the things you have to say. So until we meet again next week, is the 4th of July. I will have a show. I can't remember who I have because I keep my list. There will be a show on the 4th of July, unless the show wants to take a day off. You guys let me know. But there will be a show next Monday. I'll be on my way back from Vegas, but there'll be a show. But thank you so much for sharing and making me think about some of these things, because I think we definitely need to have more conversations about these things.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
All right. Well, this has been Intentional Talk Radio. You've been listening to Mindful Mondays with Dr. Corliss P. Bennett, and we'll see you next week. I'll see you on Wednesday, which I know is going to be a hot show, because I'm bringing back a lot of guests, and we're going to deal with all this Roe versus Wade, and now some of the other things they're going to start attacking now, because they got away with Roe versus Wade being bye-bye. So until then, take care. Have a good and safe evening. Thank you.
And thank you. You have been listening to the Intentional Talk Radio Network. It is a Monday great show, as always. Thank you for joining us right here at ITRNradio.com. And as Corliss says, stay tuned for tomorrow. We've got Change Matters. It's coming tomorrow afternoon, 5 p.m. on the Pacific, 7 p.m. on the Central State, and 8 p.m. on the East. So come on back, stick and stay. Don't go away. As Kenny Hendricks says, this is where we bring you the news and views that you can use. We talk to you, for you, with you, and about you. And it is all good. Stay tuned. We've got a great show tomorrow. Thank you for joining us right here at ITRNradio.com.
Yo, Ron, what up? It's Music. I heard you was doing My Journey So Beautiful. You and the guys are doing it over, and I really feel honored. I mean, it's a good thing that you picked that song, because I think it's important that women know how beautiful they actually are, despite whatever may be going on in the world these days. When it comes to women, how they feel about the way that they look, how men think about them, what they think men expect of them. I don't think that truly matters at the end of the day, because the only thing that really matters is how you see yourself. How you see yourself. How you